I'd like to call the meeting to order, please. And I believe that we have establishment of a quorum. And so we will move forward. And I'm going to ask you, Michelle, to please give the invocations.
Heavenly Father, we come to you. We just thank you so much for this day. We thank you, as always, we thank you so much for your mercies that are new every day. We thank you that you sing a new song over us every day and that you give us a new song every day. And we just thank you for all the things that you allow us to do and the ability to be in these positions, to be able to serve our county and our constituency and our friends and our neighbors and to do the people's work, which is noble, noble work. And I just thank you so much. Father, I pray that you will be with us today as we go through the board meeting. I pray for wisdom and discernment and knowledge and grace and just that everything that is deliberated and discussed today will be not only for your glory, but for the best of all those who we serve. In the name of Jesus, we pray. Amen.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Honor the Texas flag.
I pledge allegiance to thee,
the Texas,
one state, under God, one and indivisible.
Okay, now we are open for people desiring to address the board of directors, and we do have some names here, and we have two times to speak today, and one time is for any general comments, and the other is for the budget, and so whichever way or both ways that you choose to do that. There is a three-minute time limit that we will keep track of. So the first person that I have here is Mr. Lehman. Yes, sir.
Good afternoon. Appreciate the opportunity to address you. I have a relatively simple question. I know we've been pressed with a lot of pressure, I guess, from the state legislature whether to provide property tax relief. And so as a real estate broker, I understand, you know, where some of that pressure comes from. One of the concerns that I have is that homeowners are being buried in property taxes. We have an issue with a lot of exemptions that are in place, I guess, throughout the county. For example, we have 11,000 for your office, 11,421 agricultural exemptions of one form or another. And apparently that wipes $8.76 billion of property off the tax rolls, thereby putting pressure on, you know, generating that tax revenue from other sources. So my question really is, out of that 11,421 total of those properties, I'm curious as to how many of those properties actually see the physical on-site inspection to ensure that the ag exempt use is still legitimate in place. Mr. Spencer, perhaps you could answer that question.
Mr. Lehman, I appreciate your comments. During the public comment section of the open meeting, we're here to receive comments.
Sure.
But I have noted your questions here, and we'll definitely get with staff and work on getting an answer.
All right, great. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for your time, sir.
All right.
Okay, the next person that I have is Cosgrove, and I'm sorry.
Yes, ma'am. You were Cosgrove, so
yes, sir.
I have been dealing with the appraisal district for 39 years here, and I've known him by first name. And last 3 years, it's been a nightmare. Of course, you know, the previous appraisal chief was fired, and based on things that I'm seeing now. And I was hoping changes. The one that was fired hired Don Spencer. And I came here about maybe 9 months ago, and I asked him, introduced myself, and I said, can we go over the list of properties? And for some reason, they increased our tax values for some properties. Well, from $3,000 non-livable, the property, just a lot in the middle of creeks or whatever, and to $60,000 to $70,000. And that really broke my back. And I have been trying to, there's no communication, and we And all respect to Don, he's a nice person. I like him. In fact, I'm asking Don, you know, can we meet? I've got an attorney here, and he's not here to sue. He's just wanting to see why I'm upset. As a big taxpayer, I manage properties for my investors. There's almost 400 or 500. A year later, this is the second year now that we're in a limbo. And that's one thing. And then I had one of the representatives at the appraisal district comes into the board and says, Khosrow, I live in this neighborhood, and Khosrow doesn't take care of that customer and all that, and he's bad. And, you know, you're not supposed to do that at an appraisal. And we asked and said, can we do something about this person? That's not the way it should be. I'm respected by overwhelming majority because I made it in this great country. And God is helping me. And so the question is, why do we not have communication? I'd like to answer today because I can't get hold of them. And I also asked them 2 days ago, when is the next hearing? Because y'all representatives for all this county. And they wouldn't even tell me. I had to dig it out to come here. That's not fair. We need accountability. And I want Don to tell you right here, is he going to talk to me, talk to my son, or talk to my attorney?
30
and
seconds.
That's it. I'm sorry. That has to go. So that's what the issue is. I need something to answer. Number one, Jenna Simon did all that. And also went to my houses, to my tenants, knocked on their door and said, Khosrow said for me to check inside. That's not fair. That's not appraising. That is not. I asked Don, what have you done about it? I have not heard anything.
3 minutes.
Do you have anyone else that's going to use their time
there
to
you
speak?
Go. I appreciate you. Do you want to use your time or do you want to just go ahead? You're an narcissist.
Have you said
these two are the peacemakers. But just go ahead and reiterate my frustration. I have been doing this for 35 years. Go ahead and stand up. And
you will only have 3 minutes.
3 minutes.
Okay. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Zach Desagian. I'm a realtor here in the DFW area. And just kind of just backing like what my father has said. So we're not here to have to pursue any litigation or anything like that, or at least we try not to, but we're in the hopes of trying to, you know, make amends and settle for a bulk number of properties. I feel like there should be priority given to property owners who have, especially investors who have so many properties. And it's just definitely a concern with having to reach someone in the higher-ups, especially since it's a mix of residential and commercial assets. Normally you'd have someone from a higher position to sort of talk with you and having a negotiating strategy. And, you know, we don't want to have, like, any personal vendetta against anyone, of course. We're all, like, you know, children of God. So, with that being said, I just urge the directors to consider, definitely communication is after, you know, top priority in that. You know, we just need more of a communications with the higher ups, if that's especially for investors who have so many properties, not just one property, two, three, but hundreds of properties. That also applies to the investors that we have working for us. So with that,
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Nicholas Smith. I'm an attorney working with Khosrow regarding his properties. And again, one of the reasons we just wanted to address the board today, what was already reiterated, is just to work on settling and work on communication regarding his properties. He has hundreds of properties here that the appraisals have gone up exponentially on numerous these properties, and we're talking properties that are in floodplains and such, and appraisals are still going up exponentially. So, Mr. Spencer, I just wanted to introduce myself today, and Nicholas Smith, and just wanted to work with you or someone from your office that we can assign to Cosgrove's properties here to see if we can come to some sort of arrangement regarding settling these and get rid of any disputes that we may have regarding the properties.
Okay, I can say that we cannot deliberate today on anything that is not on the agenda. I think you know that everyone here, including our leader, takes great interest in what you have to say. Whether it's 500 properties or one property, in my mind, all people are important.
I agree.
And so I must say that. So there's a lot of demands on a lot of different levels. Does anyone else on the board have anything to say?
I agree with what you said. Yeah. But I thank y'all for coming in.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much for your time. Do you have anything?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Thank
you. All right. Nicholas, that was you. Okay, then that's all we have to speak at this time. Is there anyone else here? You're waiting on the budget,
yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. Item number 5 is call for presentation of 2022 financial audit. And we're moving that to item 10 because the auditors are not here at this time. Is that
correct.
Not a correct statement?
Yes.
Okay, so that will be heard later in the meeting. And then item number 6, we're going to get reports from Mr. Spencer and from Ms. Ashlock.
Thank you very much. I do appreciate all the comments during the public address. So first, I just want to pay some great compliments to the staff here. You know, I don't think they get enough kudos for what they're doing, especially right now. And, you know, the volume of phone calls and emails and just the walk-in traffic, you know, it's a lot. There's sometimes more than 600-800 a day that they're dealing with. Just going through that front office up there. And, you know, they do it with a smile on their face all day long. I walk through there, and they've got a great attitude, and they've all got servant's hearts. And I couldn't be more proud of, you know, the team that we have. And so I just want to say that here, that they're doing a great job. You know, every day is a new day and presents its own new challenges, you know, the remnants of the last few weeks are still in front of them as well, and like I said, they're handling that, they're taking it all in stride, and they're just doing a great job, and that goes all the way through to the appraisal department, the appeals department. Every department in this building is really working hard, and they're pitching in, and they've showed a great team effort, and I'm just grateful that you know, that I get to be a part of leading this team here in this organization. Just a couple of really quick updates that Jeannie will kind of give a little bit more detail on currently, and they're still processing some. You know, we have a couple of different staggered deadlines on the business personal property because of the rendition deadlines and just the, you know, the extended period that it takes to work those renditions and get notices out. But the majority of protests have been processed and put into the system, and we ended up just over 130,000 so far. That's by number, that's about 20% more than what we had last year. You know, values are up, yes, but I attribute a big part of that increase in numbers to just the population growth. You know, I think probably you've all seen, you know, it was just a few days ago, I believe, where North Central Texas Council of Governments came out and said that Denton County had breached the 1 million mark on population. And just a few short years ago when they did the census, Denton was just over 900,000. That's 100,000 new people in 2 years. You know, it's definitely not a one-for-one, but, you know, when you have 100,000 people, you know, in a short period of time coming into the county, I mean, that's new properties, so that's more transactions we're dealing with, that's more faces coming into the organization, and so I really do feel like that's a big part of more protest outside of just the fact that, you know, values have gone up, they've gone up you know, substantially over the last several years. And we do recognize that that puts an extra burden on, you know, all the property owners here in Denton County. And with, you know, the rising inflation and everything else, it's difficult. And, you know, property taxes, although play a very important role in all the public services, you know, it's a necessary way to fund that. And, you know, it does come directly from their pockets. And so we recognize that, and we try to handle each one of those transactions with the same respect and care, you know, understanding, you know, their frustration with those values going up and their, you know, the possibility of an increase in property taxes. I'd also like to just compliment really quick on the appraisal review board. That's another role that, while it's not, you know, under the confines of this organization, you know, they work alongside us during the season. They're really doing a great job, you know, and that's another very thankless public service that they are, you know, that they have ultimately volunteered their time all the way through the summer to sit. I mean, we have a panel going right there behind you right now that's listening to, you know, 20, 30, 40 different hearings a day, you know, and they're all unique in their own ways, all different sets of evidence that's presented in there and weighed out between a property owner and the appraisal district. They have a very challenging job in there, and, you know, but they show up day after day, and I'm hearing a lot of compliments on the process this year. That there have been some improvements, so I'm thankful for that, and so I just felt like I needed to say that. I will tell you, just as an update on ARB, kind of just so you have a feel for how things are going, you know, with the current level of ARB members that we have, most days we're able to run 8 panels. Right now we're actually running 9 panels because we have a few panels split up into a single member panel, which is a newer provision in the tax code that it allows for a single member to actually have an ARB hearing. So that has allowed for us to spread it out a little bit. But still with 9, you know, even with 9 panels running, we're scheduling about 750 a day. And, you know, a hearing, typically if it runs smooth, efficient, is about 15 to 20 minutes. So you can do the math real quick on that. You know, that's 2 to 250 a day with the capacity that we have, and we're scheduling 750 a day. So that means that 500 accounts that we're scheduling a day, we're having to work informally with these property owners as they come in prior to their hearing to try to get those settled as well. And 750 a day, you know, when you start talking about 130,000 protests, you see where this is going. It's really hard to get to, you know, less than 5% still under review by July 20th and giving the ARB an opportunity to, you know, approve the record so we can start it by July 25th. I will say that, you know, the staff has worked really hard, and they've gotten creative with some external software solutions and working on some processes to kind of work around our software, unfortunately, because our software doesn't provide for some services that we would like to have to be able to push out mass settlement offers. When I say mass settlement offers, you know, multiple offers a day rather than, you know, one appraiser sending one offer out per taxpayer manually. And we have finally been successful building a process. And so over the last few days, we've actually been able to send out about 14,000 settlement offers to protest, you know, to the property owners that have filed protests. So that's going to help us in the trajectory at trying to get to that 95% certification number as well. We've been able to continue the weekly updates to the entity portal for all of the taxing units here in Denton County. We were able to transition to an actual, you know, internally hosted website. I think from what I've heard, it's been a little bit easier and a little bit more user-friendly for the members of the taxing units to be able to access that information. So we've been pushing out, updated value totals to them on a weekly basis. We usually upload those on Saturday morning, so they usually have a fresh set of value totals out there on Monday when they come back into the office to see what's changed, and what's moved from under protest to not under review anymore. And we also put a list, a spreadsheet list out there that lists out all of the freeport and abatement properties from last year. If they had a freeport or they had an abatement on them last year, and we're going to continue to try to update that as the Business Personal Property Department works through those applications when they get them in and they process them, so we can get that information out to the taxing units as quickly as possible. But they can also see what hasn't been processed yet and be able to anticipate those numbers as they may be exempted and that taxable value comes off the roll. That really just comes from, some feedback from the latter part of last year from some of the taxing entities that had some difficulties with, estimating some of those numbers. And the last thing that I have, just to kind of let you guys know and give you a heads up, we are currently working with a contractor. Met with him this morning, Misty and I did, and we're going to have to start down a path on replacing some of the AC units over there at the other building. We have one that's completely out now, and it's such an old unit that they can't just add Freon to it anymore. Apparently, it turns out 20 years for air conditioner unit is a little bit old. So, and we have several of those that are at that mark, and they're really starting to give out. One of them is really important. It's in our server room, and they even had another instance over the weekend where they had to come in. Our IT manager had to come up here and open the doors to the server room and put some fans to cool the server room down because it was starting to get up to, kind of a critical temperature in there. And that's happened more frequently over the last few months now. It's happened several times. So that's a unit that we're about to have to look at getting replaced as well. So just to give you guys a heads up on that, because that will be an expense that we're going to have to incur pretty quick. So we're going to have to take a close look at those older units and really determine how much age we've got left in them and how much time we've got, before we really need to replace them.
How much are those per unit, roughly?
Gosh, I haven't. He's working on a proposal right now. I haven't seen that yet. Have you?
Stiff.
I believe the one that, because we just replaced another one that had gone out in the building, and I want to say all total it was 12.
I was thinking 12 to 15.
Oh, okay.
That's better than I thought.
Well, I think the building and the way it was built and added on to and just the setup and everything, I think, even the gentleman from the company this morning was explaining that the units that we have are closer to what you would see in a residential unit. They're like 5-ton units, so they're not the larger commercial units.
You're not looking at going ahead and doing both at the same time? Sometimes that can be a little bit more effective.
Well, I think we would. The only issue with that is the one that's controlling that's cooling the server room is a very special unit, and it's going to take him a little bit longer to get all of the equipment in the unit to replace that one. Where the other one, I think he's got it in warehouse and he's ready to go. So we would. We would look at doing it that way, but he's talked about how the supply it doesn't matter what brand he's looking at, it's really hard to get units right now. So it's at the mercy of the inventory levels out there.
Yeah, 100 degrees are here.
Yes, they are. They are.
Is there, does he have an estimated time of arrival for especially the server room unit? Are we talking days, weeks? Or
no, months? He knows the urgency on it, and he's really going to get to work on that. But he didn't. He didn't mention like a time that he could have that one in.
I was going to say, so if it's going to be a little while because of supply chain issues, or you know, yeah, I guess supply chain issues. Mm-hmm. May want to look into getting one of those portable units,
right.
You know, that have you vent up into the ceiling, but it's almost like a swamp cooler.
Yeah,
major
I just worry
cooler.
about the humidity with one of those in a server room. I know that we have a 5-ton unit that hits that room as kind of a backup to keep it cool. And he also mentioned, you know, if necessary, we could divert a few other ducts over there to help, you know, with to get us to the point where we get a new unit over there. So,
backing up real quick, so that software patch we've come up with the mass, is that a patch that will work for the future, or is that really just kind of for this year to get us over the hump, or?
No, it'll work as long as we're still with the software vendors that we're using right now, because we have two different software vendors. We have our appraisal software vendor, and then we have an online protest system that's another vendor. And so we're having to bridge a gap between those two. And so there's some queries that we're running, and we're generating some spreadsheets, and then we've just kind of created a little bit of a workaround. We do a process over here, and then we notify this vendor, and then they run a process, and kind of goes back and forth a little bit. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely something that, as long as we're using these two vendors, you know, it's something we can continue.
And we're anticipating we're using both those vendors next year at this point in time.
Yeah, at this point in time, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
When do you see that not taking place? One, 2, 3 years?
Don't I'm not.
When you talk about it, it sounds like it makes it much more difficult.
It does. It makes it challenging, but you know, there's also challenges with software conversion as well.
I've heard about that.
You have to. There's a little bit of a balance there on, you know, what's more important, and so.
Is there possibly a vendor that could do what you're doing in house now? Is there possibly a vendor that you could utilize that would be able to take this information, bridge that information a little bit more easily than what you're having to do in-house by sending this information here, then they send that to you, then you send it back over to them, kind of a pass-through vendor?
I don't know. Most of it would be, you know, just somebody that's, I would say that would be pretty challenging, because the database in our current CAMA software is complex, and you know, even our, you know, database administrator here, it took him a couple of years to get up to really where he could maneuver his way around that database and pull data quickly through SQL queries. So, you know, unless there's someone out there that knows that database well and also knows our online system well, you know, and there might be somebody out there that does. I just don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. That could be a sideline issue, though, that you never stop thinking about if you ran into that.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so that's pretty much all I have. I'm going to pass this over to Jeannie and let her give you some stats and a little bit more detail on some of the stuff that's going on right now.
So first I want to give you an update on appraisal. Chris couldn't be here today. He prepared most of this data that I'll share with you. The first chart you're looking at there is just the number of protests entered into the system by date. So on the far left column is the actual count of protests that were entered, and it gives you kind of just a bar chart there. You'll see about May 15th is when it really jumped up, which was right there by the deadline. 15th, 16th, 17th, 18th, that week was pretty pretty big. And then on the next page, there are a couple of big spots where we have other deadlines for BPP as well. So it kind of goes up and down. And that also shows the grand total of 131,562 protests. That was, as of yesterday morning, about 9 a.m. Was the total number that we had in the system. If you go to the next page, that chart will show you the difference between real property and business personal property. So for anyone that doesn't know, real property is basically building and land, any kind of improvements. Business personal property is anything besides building and land that you use for a business. So you'll see there that the majority of the protests are real property at 125,000, almost 126,000. On the next chart, it takes just the real property portion, the 100 almost 26,000, and breaks it down between commercial, mobile homes, and residential properties. And you'll see there that residential makes up about 91% of the total real property protests. 8% is commercial, and less than 1% is mobile homes. If you go to the next one, this is the protest reasons. You may remember last month, Chris explaining that we have a certain number of protests, but each protest, they can mark multiple things that they have a dissatisfaction with. There are lots of reasons that people can protest. And when you total those up, it's about 280,000 reasons, and those are each an item that the appraisers have to prepare for to defend in hearings. But you'll see there, it's probably not surprising to you that number one is market value. That's the most protested at 45%. And right behind that is value is unequal. So most of them are regarding value. The next page is just the breakdown of all that data, if you're interested in that. And the next one is the protest status. So that's currently, what status are all these protests, where are they at in the process? Most of them are just scheduled at this point. But we do have 23,000 that we have waivered, meaning we have come to a settlement agreement, either with the agent or the owner of those. And then cases heard, you'll notice, is almost to 6,000. Probably counting yesterday and today, it's probably almost there. About 6,000 cases heard. And then we had about 1,800 people that just didn't show up for the hearing. And the next page is just the data on that chart as well. So this brings me to the help spot interactions. These are commonly referred to as help tickets. A lot of times they're emails, and they go into our help ticket database. The best line to look at is probably the total interactions, which is the top one. It's broken down, though, between staff comments and customer comments. But you'll see kind of over the last year or so, year and a half, kind of the ebb and flow there. Have the actual numbers, and in May we had a total of 34,048 total interactions on the help ticket system, which is the most, I believe, ever in a month. Interestingly enough, I went back and just looked at the numbers for May over the past 2 years. In May of 21, we had 14,000 interactions in May, and in 22, we had over 20,000 interactions, and then this year we're at 34,000 interactions.
Do you have a reason to explain that? How does that?
Well, you know, not only value's going up, I mean, May is the busy season because of protests. You know, we have more protests, meaning we have more people that need help or assistance mm-hmm. with something. Also, as Dawn mentioned, the population has gone up. We're also trying to document more, so we have more tickets. But also I think people want to use email more these days than they have in the past. It's just easier and quicker, and they don't have to hang
just
on
a big job
on the phone. Yeah, it is.
Well, I do think, too, not to interrupt, but I also think, you know, because we did send all of the real property notices all at once.
At the same time.
Yes.
Yeah. May this year.
Yeah.
On May, you know, or April 17th, and the deadline was to file was May 17th. So that did create a little bit more of a bottleneck for us there because there were, you know, twice as many at that same time as there was last year. So that also kind of, I think, plays into that increase a little bit as well.
I would hope maybe it's also that y'all are communicating a little better.
Definitely, absolutely.
Whether we like it or not,
absolutely.
Like what you said.
And like Jeannie said, we are trying to funnel everything through that system because it does keep a good record of, you know, the interaction from beginning to end.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's easy to trace back. It's all centralized. It's a little bit harder when you're just shooting emails back and forth, you know, and especially when you've got, you know, 90 different people with email accounts,
right.
You know, but funneling everything through this help ticket system does definitely help keep us organized on the communications. So.
And the next one is the phone calls. The blue line is the volume. That's calls that actually came in. The red line are the ones that we've actually got to, meaning some people may have gotten the answer they wanted on a recording and hung up, or they didn't want to wait and they hung up. But either way, you can see there the increase. Of course, that's typical this time of year for a large increase. So our appeals department, the update I just gave you was for appraisal, but you know, on the other side of that, we have the appeals team, and they're back there entering protests, scheduling protests, trying to get their tickets answered, answering phone calls as best they can, and they also help upload any kind of evidence or affidavits or things like that for the hearings. So they're very busy. And then our IT department, they of course are supporting us and helping us with all the technical items as they always do. But they are also helping us to answer those tickets. They've been really helpful, and we're down to about 1,000 right now, which is pretty good considering the number of tickets we get that come in. Customer service and exemptions department, pending applications as of yesterday was just under 10,000. About almost 5,000 of those were received just in May. So that's quite staggering. It's a lot to get through. However, we have filled some of our vacant positions with some temps, so we're hoping to get them up to speed soon, possibly even hire them on eventually. So we're hoping to get through that number pretty quickly. And then our HR and finance department, they've been busy working on budget items and the audit and things of that nature. So we're all just working right along.
So we got a couple of emails addressed directly to the board from taxpayers. I don't need to know what the resolution was. I don't care. But since we couldn't communicate, I just want to make sure. I know Bill Davidson, and I know there was a lady, couldn't get some file. Somebody addressed those, correct? Because you were on the email. That's all I needed. Perfect.
And I want to add one other thing to what you said earlier. I think every one of us in this room have to realize the workload of all these people. And while we're not 100% perfect, anyone, I do believe, Donna, what you said, these people are to be really commended, and we've proved it with this data. So I really, really think that's quite a saying. And I didn't pick it up until she showed all this, what you were really getting to the heart of.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, it is a lot. It is.
It's
kind of overwhelming at times. But
doesn't mean it's all perfect, but it's...
Right.
We do our best.
Yes, absolutely. One other thing I wanted to mention was just the telephone wait time. The average for this month was about 34 minutes. So I think that's better than last year, I hope.
It is. You know I have heartburn.
Yes. That's why I was looking at you. Yes. The average normally when we're not as busy is 2 to 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Part of that is the recording that they get at the beginning. So some were, of course, way shorter, some longer, but just some data for you.
It's good to track that, though. Thank you for doing that.
Of course.
That's
all
great.
I had.
Okay, we've moved to the consent agenda, and there's two items on that agenda. And one is the minutes, and the other is the past budget report. Is that not correct?
On the consent, it would just be the minutes and then the financials.
Yeah, yes.
I move approval. Consent agenda.
I'll second.
All in favor? All right. So we have taken the motion. There was no comments on that. And then we have item number 8, and that's the Eagle appraisal. Approval of $2,500, I believe.
Yes.
And I think Don and I can make comments, but you'd be better at it.
So Eagle Appraisal is a company ran by a gentleman by the name of Gary Zeitler. You guys may recognize, a few of you may recognize that name. He's in this industry, been in this industry for probably 40 years, you know. And ag valuation is at the heart and soul of his business. He does that across the state for several different CADs. And he is a great resource for this particular project, which is just calculating his ag productivity values. You know, he has got a plethora of data on that he collects, you know, from county to county, and so it's really helpful. And he works closely with our Ag Advisory Board to make sure that those productivity values that are used are in line with the current, you know, rates of income and expense for ag property for the production. And so we've used him for the last few years for this specific purpose to help us calculate those values. And all I'm asking you to do is to consider and approve and allow me to sign a contract with Eagle Appraisal for the 2024 and 2025 tax years at an amount of $2,500 per year to use that service. And I'd be willing to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions from anyone? Okay. Do we have a motion?
I'd like to make a motion to approve the item as stated.
Okay.
Second.
Second. All in favor? Our discussion, I'm sorry. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Okay. Item number 9, public hearing for the 2024 Denton CAD budget. And I want to call the public hearing open, and then we will look for our comments from anyone in the audience. And is a card to be filled out if they chose to speak for this section as well?
I did not receive any cards.
Okay. Does anyone here want to?
Just to confirm, I think you said Jamie was, there were over 10,000 current.
Just under 10,000, you said.
5,000 just in May?
Yes. Those are just homesteads.
I did want to just make a couple comments for the public hearing.
Okay, then public hearing is open.
All right.
I'd love to hear your comments.
Thank you, I appreciate it. Thank you for the opportunity to get before you and just share some comments. I'm David Earp, I'm the finance director for the city of Louisville, and I think for the last several years, I think we've tried to be involved and engaged with the appraisal district and to just work with you in collaboration. I think that works best. Especially during these crazy times, and I'm very appreciative of Michelle and her team, Stacy, helping us through with questions. I had a conversation with Don earlier this week, and I just want to make a couple comments before I get to the budget comments. But in my position, from my perspective, I think Don has been a wonderful change as far as communicating, being responsive to me. If I drop an email, he'll pick up a phone. I'm just very appreciative of that. We spent some good time on the phone earlier this week talking about the rationale behind some decisions that were made with the budget, and I'm appreciative of that. A couple other non-related budget things just real quick. The portal, I think getting that assessment information has been great. We've been able to go in, pull it down, we update it every week. We maintain a record of that and track that, so it's been really helpful. And then you talk about the process this year about getting all the values out in April. I think that was great. It does create some additional work come May, but it starts that clock. It gets you, you know, to be able to start addressing those appeals and moving the process forward. So I think those couple things alone is really helping that process, and I think there's just vast improvements over what we had in previously. Regarding the budget itself, you know, we've been communicated with from Don and his team. We had a meeting in March, and then we had another one in May, provided us budget, so we had an idea what was coming down the pipe, and we understand that. We understand the kind of issues that we're dealing with here. We're dealing with ramping up staff and getting staff on hand so that they can address the needs and move the workflow, and then you've got the problem of where you put them, right? So you've got competing, initiatives that you have to fund. So you're having to make choices with your available funds, and we get that. Earlier renditions of the budget included the use of some reserves to help subsidize or support or soften the increases, but in the most recent one, it had been eliminated. And I think there's been discussion here with the board and with staff about rationale for doing that, and we understand that. But with that decision to not utilize reserves, it's really having an impact on the entities, including ourselves. And if we compare back to what we our final amount was last year and was proposed this year, it's about a 26% increase. So it's quite significant to us. And again, I'm not sharing anything that I didn't share with Don Henry, so I don't want to speak out of turn here. But that's just a big nut for us. And we're in good financial position. So if there's other entities that maybe are not in the same place, they might not be able to absorb that. You know, anything that we've done that we've had at the City of Lewisville that deals with transitioning or phasing in or phasing out fee increases or things like that, we'll do it over time just to soften it so you don't have spikes. And I guess our recommendation would be to consider phasing off or weaning off the use of the reserves. I know you used $1 million in this current fiscal year or calendar year. If you consider phasing that off over a couple years, that might be a good faith effort to the entities for that. You know, even at $500,000, it saves the city $15,000. So we're not talking huge amounts, but it's just kind of something that you can throw out there to the members. And understanding how, you know, there's now going to be 11 new hires that are going to be added to the budget, which we are supportive of. I just want you to know that we're supportive of the budget and the direction that the CAD is taking for this. We're totally supportive. There's going to be some lag time for when those get filled, and if you're budgeting for those positions, there's potential savings there. That so even if you commit $500,000 towards the budget, you probably get some of that back. And I imagine, I didn't get a chance to see what the budget was or the audit for the year, but I imagine for this last fiscal year that the general fund reserves grew from savings, either from expenses or from personnel. That's just my guess.
30 anyway, seconds.
I'm sorry?
30 seconds.
Okay, I'll just finish up real quick. Anyway, consideration by the board here to phase out the reserves rather than broadly cutting them off. And then just two quick comments. We talked about a potential committee that comes together that talks about capital planning and building. More than happy to participate and contribute and help out whatever's needed with that. And then as far as a capital program, when it comes to funding for the City of Lewisville, we would prefer a one-time capital contribution to help support the effort rather than ongoing operating. It just helps us in our budgeting process. But I think those are things that we can vet and work through you know, when the time comes. But those are my comments. I appreciate your time
Are there any? Is there anyone else that has not spoken yet that would like to speak? Okay, I'm not sure. I must ask, since you've already used time, but there were two places to talk today. Would he be allowed to have another 3 minutes on this, or did he take that time up the first round? I'm sorry, I don't know.
Just 1 minute.
He did take it up the first time.
No, he gets to.
He does get. Okay, sir. Oh. Go ahead. Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. I just was not sure.
So basically, I was glad to hear the gentleman from Louisville indicated that his email's been answered and he's been having good communications. And that was really the issue I had for the last 12 months. And we're not communicating and asking for help to get together to resolve issues. And really, that's it. I mean, Don is a very nice guy, and I think he just hired a deputy chief that was going to hopefully help, and that way we can communicate. Now, I'm not the only one. I connect with 75 different investors and agents for 7,000 properties, and it's not just me thinking that way. It's them too. So I'm just saying, look, let's work together. And my attorney indicated that he's got pictures of all these properties and stuff that could get together with Don for a few minutes here this evening and just show it, because he doesn't probably know what they've done behind his back. That's all.
Okay. Thank you for your time. Any other comments at this time? Okay. We will close the public hearing. Don, do you have any comments?
Yes, I do. So I'm just going to read over some stuff really quick for you guys. And it's just my comments on the budget. and I do, David, I appreciate your comments. I'm appreciative of the phone call and the conversation we had on that. Totally respect City of Louisville's position on the budget and what we had decided when we presented this proposed budget. Over the last few months, there have been several meetings, as David even alluded to, about the 2024 proposed budget. I feel like this budget is a good representation of the collective efforts that have been made to ensure appropriate funding for the operations of the CAD, while being as conservative as possible to allow for the continued growth and provide the much-needed resources for our organization. After many conversations with entities and the board, I made the decision to hold our reserves for facility expansion. If approved, the additional staff would provide for in this budget will fill any excess space that we have currently in our facilities, leaving us little to no room to continue to grow, which, you know, that's one of our challenges right now, is we've got to continue to grow this organization. Additionally, more space to facilitate the ARB hearings is needed. We're currently really out of space for ARB hearings. The continued growth in staff and ARB operations are two key components that will allow us to better serve the taxpayers and the entities through the appeal season and enable us to reach the statutory requirements for certifying the appraisal roll in a timely manner. While we certainly understand the financial impact to the entities through this budget increase, we also recognize the importance of timely and accurate certified appraisal roll. The need for more space sooner rather than later is inevitable. We believe that the best stewardship of our funds is by holding cash for expansion, which will create less of a financial impact in the long haul for the entities by lowering financing needs for the necessary expansion. As previously stated in our budget workshops, the majority of the increase in the 2024 proposed budget is providing for 11 more full-time employees, as well as some IT and software solutions that will help us increase efficiency in some of our processes. We are confident that with this budget, we can continue to improve our operations and provide the necessary training and development of the new personnel we are seeking to add, as well as further enhancing the skill sets of our current staff. The total amount of the proposed budget as presented is $20,347,801.73, which is just over a $2.5 million increase from 2023, and this provides for 115 full-time employees to be staffed. And at this time, I would open the floor for discussion, so if you're ready to close the public hearing, then we can open with agenda item number 10.
For discussion.
Yes.
By the board. Okay. Close the public hearing and open.
Yeah, I mean, what I remember the meetings I went to, I got conflicting things from all the entities. Same sort of thing. Do we you know, subsidize this somewhat now, take a hit next year, and then take a hit next year plus, you know, facility either starting next year or the following year. But it's coming. That's obvious. And when in doubt, I think I chose the same thing. Kind of maybe just keep it in reserve and soften. It's harder this year. It'll be softer next year. Y'all thought?
I have a little bit of mixed feelings on this topic. You know, I think it's either half full or half empty, depending on which way you want to look at this. And in some ways, I would like to see at least a $500,000 taken out, I mean, put in, because that way these cities who did, I mean, Lewis was doing great, but there are some cities and school districts out here are facing a mirage of problems that are not anything to really do with us here, but they're our problem to help them. And so in some ways, to me, that shows everyone, because they're going to be the ones that have to carry the burden when we announce we're building 1 million or 10 million building. And so that, to me, kind of means we're giving them a little bit of help this year to know we're trying to pull out. And Don, you have done the best job. I cannot compliment enough what you, your team, all of you have done. But I think there needs to be a break in this that says, you know, we're proud of that board. They took $500,000, put it back in for us, and we know we're going to have a building. No one hires that. That's where I'm torn up.
I'm with you. It's not a clear-cut decision.
No, it's 50-50, and there's no wrong. But I've got to put that on the table. I've just got to.
Okay. Can we do that today, or do we have to resend it out to everybody?
No, you absolutely can. You can make any kind of changes or amendments to this, and if we do make any amendments, which this is not an amendment to the budget. This is just a change to the funding and to the allocations to the entities.
I got it.
And so we can definitely do that, I'm sure that Kim could work on making the changes to the allocation sheet to be able to send a new, you know, a newly revised allocation estimate out to all of the taxing units so they could see the effects.
Well, how much effect would it be overall? Can you give me that? You mentioned for Lewis.
It's just going to depend, you know, going back to your comment, you know, I guess if I was going to say something, I'd probably say that I could go along with using, you know, $500,000 of the reserves as well. If the board so pleases, and so then it just really kind of breaks down to how much a percentage of the entity funds of our budget. So, you know, whatever it is, if it's 2% or 8% or 10%, then basically that's going to break out of the impact to the taxing.
And in saying this, I'm going to support with whatever the rest of the board chooses. I just had to get that discussion on the table.
Well, I will say I have utmost respect for one of our largest stakeholders taking the time to come here and express that. That means a lot as far as I'm concerned. David, your thoughts?
I'm sorry.
Oh, on maybe using $500,000 reserve to...
Am I in favor of that?
Yeah.
Based on what I've heard, and without doing an in-depth analysis on service, sounds reasonable to me.
Okay.
So, here's my thoughts.
Sure.
I absolutely, you know, David, thank you very much. I mean, we do absolutely want to be responsive to our entities because, you know, as we all know, the economy is taking a hit, our entities are taking a hit, our employees are, you know, everyone is. So the comment was to draw down or phase out. So my thoughts are one of two things. If we take $500,000 this year, then next year there is no drawdown. We just have to deal with whatever we have. Or we do $250,000 this year and $250,000 next year to equal $500,000, and that would be a little bit of a drawdown. I don't know how much of an assistance that would be to our entities, but I don't know that we can necessarily do $500,000 this year and $500,000 next year and still accomplish the needs of the district that are going to be, that are so pressing.
But I don't think we can restrict next year's board.
No, and you're exactly right. You're exactly right. So, I'll withdraw that. That's
right.
True.
Right.
Yeah. I'll go with whatever y'all think. I'm torn as well because there's a lot of needs right now. To your point, I think that everyone understands that the quicker that we can get more employees in, the quicker that we can continue to right the ship. Everyone's doing a fantastic job. We need more ARB members. Do we need to look at payment structure for that? You know, what type of things do we need to do to try to be able to build in that ability to meet those deadlines? And so you have that. You've got to pay for employees. You've got to pay for a facility. If you don't have the employees, you don't have the facility needs, but then we're still all racing to catch up. So I have a lot of mixed emotions as well. But if our entities are saying, hey, give us a little bit more time, I'm okay with that.
Kim, what do we typically add to a reserve in a year? I mean, there's no guarantees. And that's what they're there for. But have we been adding consistently to our reserves over the last three, 4 years?
Years.
Mm-hmm. A couple hundred thousand?
Anywhere from four less, I believe, six, actually.
Okay.
But yes.
So we might be able to absorb it. And still, we might have the same place on reserves.
I think that's where it's at.
Yeah.
So,
what I saw.
It's a roll of the dice, obviously. We know that. But I think I might be more than
that. I truly believe that the money, all the things that we put in the budget this year, power to you guys because we gave it to y'all because we believe in you. There's still going to be some leftover money because we're not going to hire all those people the first month. We're not going to have all the tools the first month. So, again, we're going to build some reserves.
Hopefully.
So, no promises on the following years.
Right.
A lot of us will
right.
not even be here in the following year. So, what we need to do is make sure right now, $500,000 on the size of this budget is not much of anything, to be honest, but it shows that we're trying as well.
And we're listening. We're here.
Yeah. So, either way.
I'm for the $500,000.
Okay. Is that a motion?
Oh, I move we approve the budget with an additional $500,000 used from our reserves towards the allocation. Did I say that right?
Yep.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Oh, that's right. I like sitting over here better. Okay. All right. Anything else? If not, the motion has carried.
Okay.
Any comments?
Separate. Comment on the budget.
Okay.
So go ahead and
I'll
ask that question if you do the.
Okay. Motion has been approved. Okay.
Okay.
Go ahead with your comments. I'm sorry.
Don, we added 17 people potentially in the budget a year ago and 11 this year. The two big things we talked a lot about, where do we put those people when we bring them on board? Where are we right now in terms of openings based on budgeted positions?
Our biggest openings right now are actually in the customer service department. Trying to fill those positions. We have five open positions. And then residential department, we have seven open in residential. We lost, two or three earlier on before protest season even started in residential. Those are our two key departments right now that we're obviously focused on. As soon as we're actually going to start posting the job openings again in July, so we can work to fill those positions in August.
So the job market to find qualified people to fill positions that open is pretty tight and pretty tough based on positions and availability of people for those positions.
It is.
How many people do you project, 17, 11? That was a lot of catching up to do. We were so understaffed, comparatively speaking to other big camps. Do you have a vision of, you know, if I'm an entity, I understand the need for, you know, we talked about that a year ago. This is not a one-time deal. It's a year-by-year adding on to reach the level where we should be based on growth and existing base numbers. Do you see a number, a lot of things that come into play, but do you have a number that potentially might happen next year on the budget in terms of bringing our staffing up to a level of demand?
My current plan that I have drafted is going to include asking for another 10 employees in 2025.
Potentially 10?
Yes, another about, I think I would have to, I don't have it memorized right now, but 2026 would be somewhere around 5 or 6, and then the following year would be another 5 or 6, trying to get us up to about 135 employees. I feel like, you know, right now, I mean, that may change over the course of a few years, but right now that's kind of my target, you know, to get us to over the next 3 to 4 years is about 135 people. I feel like that would, in the right departments, that would staff us closer to adequately to be able to do the job and operate efficiently. So, yeah, that's kind of my thoughts right now.
This may have been discussed in depth. I previously missed a couple of meetings, but the facility issue was a big a year ago, you know, finding place where we put the 11 new people, and are we moving to a point where we will go through the process of getting additional space, building, whatever? How are you going to, and I guess the bottom line is, where are you going to put the 11 people? You already, you know, based on 120, you already have adding 11 into that number.
Yeah, we're going to have to get creative. Looking at some options on possibly, you know, a hybrid work environment to where some of the roles I feel like can work remotely a little bit, you know, and so if I can if we can create a schedule and an environment where, you know, we've got more shared workspace, you know, especially with some of the appraisal department and possibly even some of the customer service, some of the ones that are more focused on just processing, I feel like then we can, you know, buy ourselves a little bit of time by, you know, like I said, using space as shared workspace where, you know, 1 week an employee's here and one employee's at home, and then every other week they switch, you know, it's kind of on shifts.
A lot of companies do it, if you're on that, as a way of coping with, you know, number of people coming in and space available.
Right.
So that's a viable option, and I think you will find all the employees be receptive to that, and if you integrate it with the right people coming in and the ones that would not be on site. I guess my last comment I wanted to make is we talked a year ago about the importance of communication, and that came up today a few times. I'm a city councilor colony. We're an entity, and for public record, I want you to know our mayor had some issues with communication, and as a council, we did. He on public TV, all our meetings on TV, acknowledged the fact that he could not be more pleased with the communication. It avoids misinformation. It justifies what we're doing, and his comments were just, you know, right on spot in terms of how communication has improved to the point where we now are gaining a reputation. It takes time, but we are gaining a reputation of being responsive, communicating effectively, and acting within realistic numbers on a budget. So I just wanted to let you know, as a city council member who's calling me the other half of Avon, you met expectations on how to communicate effectively with us as an entity.
Thank you.
That's all I had.
I appreciate that.
Okay. Any other comments? Yes.
No, I'm here. Waving at Paige.
Hey, we're waving.
All right, we're going to wave at you now.
Okay, so now we close. Have we closed?
We're already closed.
We're closed. You brought it up in discussion. Okay.
Alex made it.
So, guess what? We get to hear the audit. Thank you for your patience.
No problem.
Was there a vote and approval on?
On the budget?
Yes.
With the amendment of the $500,000.
Okay. All right.
Yes, and reserves. And you got that.
I did. Yes.
Thank you, sir. Mm-hmm. And this will be to actually accept the 2022 audit.
Yes.
Yes, I'd like to introduce Dan Tahn. He's our auditor, has been since I've been here, and he is with Hankins Deaton. Let's see if I get the whole
etc.
Eastern Deaton, Tahn, and Say. So welcome him, and he will be presenting the 2022 audit.
All right, thanks, Kim. It's good to be with you. Appreciate you accommodating me on your schedule. I was auditing one of your entities today, so it was up in Pilot Point at the school district. So I just want to start out by saying I think the audit went very well. We didn't have any problems or issues during the audit. All of the information was readily available and well organized. We were able to get all of the information that we needed from Kim and Don and all of the staff. So from that standpoint, it went very well. We'll look at the financials in just a minute, but I want to start on pages 1 and 2, which is our auditor's report. It's what's referred to as an unmodified report. That's the highest level of report that you can receive as a governmental entity. The term unmodified really refers to the fact that no modifications were necessary to the standard auditor's report that's in our standards. And so it's a clean report, if you will. The first section of the report is management's discussion and analysis. I'm not going to go through this really in much detail at all, because all of the numbers that are presented here are in the financial statements that we're going to look at. The key takeaway, I think, in the financial highlights on page 4 is your expenditures were under budget. Your revenues were basically right on budget, within over 99%. We're going to look at it in a little bit, but there's kind of an unusual situation this year with your pension liability, and we'll talk about that. There was a big swing in your pension. You went from being underfunded to being overfunded at the end of the year, and we'll look at the detail of that in a minute. Very little change in capital assets. It did increase by 8%. Most of the capital asset activity was the completion of the customer service area renovation that was in process at the end of 21 and was finished in the first several months of 2022. So not the entire project was recorded in this year, but the completion of that project. It talks a little bit about the different types of financial statements that are presented. You may recall that the district issues both fund basis financial statements, which is on a modified accrual method of accounting, and then it also presents what are called government-wide financial statements that take the fund financial statements and convert those to a full accrual basis, which includes capital assets and long-term debt, which those two items are not included in the fund financial statements. And we'll look at that in just a minute. There's a little section on page 9 that talks about economic factors in the next year's budget. Your budget for 23 was $17.8 million, which was up from roughly 15 point something. The actual financial statements begin on page 11. The first two statements are the government-wide statements that I mentioned. I want to defer those and look at the fund financial statements first. Those begin on page 13 with your governmental fund balance sheet. You only have one fund, which is the general fund. You ended the year right at $9 million in total assets, which is primarily cash and cash equivalents. You had $2.4 million of liabilities, almost all of which is unearned revenue, which are, in effect, entity allocations that you received in December for the first quarter of 23. So you bill those out the 1st of December, something like that. And a lot of entities pay those in December, even though they're paying for their first quarter 23 allocation. So that's not recognized as income until your fiscal year 23. So you received a total of about $2.3 million in prepaid allocations, if you will. So the if you take the difference between those, you have a total fund balance at the end of the year, $6.6 million. There's several categories there of committed fund balance for different future projects and things of that nature. So your unassigned fund balance was $495,000. That $6.6 million in fund balance represents an increase of right at $600,000, which is shown on page 15. You can see that your total revenues were $15.2 million, which was slightly above, right at budget. Some of your miscellaneous income was a bit below budget, but interest income was quite a bit above budget. As you know, interest rates have gone up considerably over the last 18 months. And since your budget is prepared 6 months before the year starts, at least, they had already gone up by the first of the year, so you really had higher interest rates throughout the fiscal year for the calendar year. Expenditures were at $14.7 million, so you increased your fund balance by $600,000. I think that there was a question during the budget process about that. That was pretty close to what it was in 21. 21 was $639,000 increase. So now that we've looked at those fund financial statements, I want to go back and look at the government-wide. As I said earlier, the primary difference between the two is the government-wide brings in your capital assets, and it brings in your long-term debt, which in your case is almost all pension liability and deferred inflows related to the pension plan. The TCDRS plan in 2021 had a very good year investment-wise. I know it's hard to remember 2 years ago, but 21 was a very good year in the market. 22 was a terrible year. That's what everybody remembers. But 21 was a good year. I think the S&P was up 19% or something like that. And so TCDRS experienced that very favorable investment return. And so that was very, very favorable to the what's called the net pension liability. And you actually went from having a unfunded pension of $10.2 million was the unfunded liability last year, and you actually went to having a pension asset at the end of 22. It's confusing because the activity in your 22 financial statements reflects the 21 activity of TCDRS because they run a year behind because it takes them that long to issue all the numbers to you. They do an actuarial study every year, and they don't have all of their numbers until late the next following year. So so that created a $9.3 million favorable increase in your net position. If you look at the very bottom, your net position is $11.5 million. That number was $1.2 million last year because of that $10 million unfunded pension liability. But the I think their actuarial assumption on investment return is 7.3%. And as I said, I think the market was up 18 to 19%. So that caused a really large increase in your net position. It's really meaningless, if you will, because you're probably going to lose all that in 22, or your 23 statements, TCDRS's 22 activity, because the market was down in 2022. So it kind of goes up and down with their investment return. So that's a long, confusing explanation. I hope it helps a little bit. Do you know if TMRS has had similar?
Yes, we're experiencing the same thing.
Yeah.
So it's always in arrears, so you have to recall way back what the returns were, but basically the same thing.
Yeah.
We saw the double-digit returns in 21 and decline in 22.
Cities are under TMRS, Texas Municipal Retirement System, whereas counties and the appraisal district are under TCDRS. They're very similar plans. But overall, you had a good year. You added to fund balance. You added to net position. Some of that net position increase was, I don't want to say they're meaningless, let's just call them paper gains. It's going to fluctuate. I had an actuary tell me that one time, that we were talking about investments. He said the investment, time horizon for a retirement plan is infinity because you assume that you'll always be here and you'll always have employees. Some will come, some will go. Beginning on page 17, I believe, is where the notes to the financial statement start. Yeah, 17. I won't go through these. It just talks a lot about the different elements in the financial statements and how they're accounted for. There's a section on page 19 on your capital assets. We talk about fund balance and the categories of fund balance, your cash and investments, capital assets on page 23. You can see that You added $556,000 to buildings, which would include the construction in progress at the beginning of the year, right at $100,000. And then your accumulated depreciation there is at the bottom. Beginning on page 24 is a note on that defined benefit plan, and it just kind of goes on forever and ever. Anything you ever wanted to know about TCDRS, it talks about the measurement date being December 31st of 21. It does run in arrears with your financial statements. There's an interesting disclosure at the bottom of page 32. Their investment return discount rate is 7.6%. And this shows you the variability of that if you have just a slight change in actual returns. You have a $2.9 million pension asset. In other words, you're overfunded. But if rates were to decrease 1% over the life of the calculation, you would have a liability of $3.6 million. And if it was, if there was a 1% increase, you would have an asset of $8.4 million. So you can see the swings that can occur just from a very small change in investment return assumptions. There is some required supplementary information beginning on page 37. There's a budget comparison, and then there's another long schedule that shows 10 years of trend lines on your pension and related ratios. The fourth number from the bottom is your pension asset, and you can see if you look back every year prior to that, it was a pension liability. It was $10.2 million in 20, and which is the highest that it had been. But the real key is your funded ratio, which is now 106%, which is a very strong level of funding. So I'll be happy to try to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you. That was a very good presentation.
Thank you.
Questions? Kim, do you have any comments?
I do not.
Yes, sir. I know we have similar kind of budget approach at the city council level. Mm-hmm. And I always ask the question, on a scale of 1 to 10, when you look at other comparative numbers, other, you know, CADs or whatever, is there a simple way you could say, if I had to give you a grade from 1 to 10, I'd give you a 7 or a 6 or whatever. Is that beyond your...
Yeah, I don't know if I can be that precise. I would just say that the district is in good financial condition. They've got a very healthy fund balance, and they're adding to that fund balance.
Are we on a plus trend? Because you either go up or you go down.
You've added to fund balance for the last several years.
And so we continue to trend up?
Yes, sir.
Can you make that comparison? And no... I would call issues that are alarming or came up with
any. We didn't have any control issues or things of that nature.
Well, that's really an important part of our operation, obviously, how we manage the money we receive via taxation. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Any other comments anywhere?
I'd just like kudos to Kim for making sure this process ran smoothly. I mean, there's a lot here, and we
did
a big data dump, and that's to be commended. Thank you.
I will point out one thing on the TCDRS. I just pulled the number that, if you want just a quick number to have in your back pocket, is the funded ratio.
And if I look at the last 3 years, 20 was 95.8, 21 was 96.5, and 22 is 96.7. So it's just holding very, very healthy and steady. And that's the play numbers that go up and down. We can't do anything about that. Sure. There's no opinion to be had. That funded ratio is very important.
Yeah, the plan is really in really good shape. This whole accounting system for pensions, governmental pensions, has been around about 10 years now. And it was, the whole reason it came into existence was that there were so many plans that were severely underfunded. TRS was one of those, teacher retirement system. It's improved significantly. But 10 years ago, it was fairly well. And then you've heard the really famous ones, Detroit and Dallas Fire and Pension, Dallas Fire and Police Pension. They almost went bankrupt. So I think you should feel good about the TCDRS plan and that it's well managed and has a very solid funding ratio.
Okay. Any other comments? Thank you, sir, for the
time. Thank you very much.
I hated to leave you sitting back there.
Oh, that's okay.
We had to move forward with the budget. Okay, I need a motion to accept the financial audit as presented.
I move approval.
I'll second.
Okay. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you, sir.
Thank
you.
Thank you.
Okay.
I enjoyed hearing the budget presentation, by the way.
There's never a dull moment in the budget presentation. Okay, I think we're going to adjourn to executive session. Is that not correct?
Yes.
Okay. And so,
thank you, Kim.
Thank you.
We did it.
Oh, yeah. It was big time.
Good?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm sorry. I was reading your notes. I think the only thing left is to set the next board of directors meeting. Is that correct? And there was no action that needed to be taken on anything discussed in executive session. So now, the next meeting date. Don, do you have a recommendation on that?
Yeah.
You have down here the 31st.
I got August 10th.
I've got July 13th. Oh.
Based on the schedule we sent out,
here, September.
We actually said September 7th,
yeah.
But then we're going to back it up to August 31st.
Yeah. August 31st, so not July 13th.
Right, but so even here more recently, because you had said that you wouldn't be available
for
the 31st.
No, I'm not available. But if you've got a quorum, that's the main thing. That's what we accomplished here today.
Yeah.
I'm around the 31st.
I actually have training that day. From the 30th through the 1st, I'm going to be in training. Actually, it's the Ledge Conference.
So, what about August the 17th?
I'm clear that day.
I'm clear that day.
I am clear that day.
He said that he would make that work.
That's right. Okay. Right. Because that is one of the agenda items that we're going to have is discussion on insurance.
Okay.
On the group health insurance. So that's why we're kind of trying to get this meeting together. So I guess, yeah, there won't be one in July. It'll be August 17th. And was there any other items that you all feel like needs to...
17th.
August 17th. Yeah, it'll be at 3 p.m. And we should be able to pick back up with our meetings over there by then. But as it gets closer, I'll let you know if we're still having ARB hearings or anything like that.
Sure.
we'll circle back on that before. But is there, are there any other agenda items that you all can think of that you want to discuss?
Anybody have anything? I don't know about agenda items. Is there any way we can at least recognize the hard work of your team?
That's a great idea.
I was actually thinking about saying
that. And I'm not sure what that means, to be quite honest.
Head count. I mean, between your staff and ARB people, do you have a 110-ish, 120?
So there's currently 27 ARB members. And staff right now, we're at 90 even. So, and we've got our temps that have been.
How about some cookies?
Yeah, something
those,
that just
those went all
shows.
Well last time, didn't it?
Yeah, that's good.
I'll just put everybody's name on if that's okay.
Yeah,
that's cool. But I didn't want to do it without.
Yeah, well, that sounds great.
Somebody.
Yeah, just something that lets them know somehow.
Yeah.
Great idea.
Is tomorrow a good day or do it next week? Friday's good.
I mean, I think Friday's just fine right now.
I'll have it done before I leave.
Are you going to do the...
Yeah, tips, treats, easy.
See, it's just a simple thing.
It seems like you're genuine when you're really not. Perfect for me. I know, I had it and I lost it.
It's, you keep that thought in your head.
I think we're genuine.
Glad I brought that up.
I'll send them to you, Don. We need a name. I think that's what I did last time.
Okay.
You know, the thing that I think is amazing, and we can talk or close the agenda, but I do think it's amazing this budget today has gone through.
Yeah.
And how many people did we have in that office? And meeting is adjourned.
Motion
to adjourn the meeting.
I move. We adjourn the meeting.
I'll second.
He really wants
all
to
in favor.
All in favor?
Aye.